Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, 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 welcome. With the recent increase in gas and food prices, almost everyone I know complains at some level about the cost of living today and the fact that wages are not increasing in line with that cost of living. And the disparity between the wealthy and middle classes appears to be growing exponentially. So today we're looking at five strategies for financial fitness. And specifically, we're looking at how women interact with money and what women need to know to create a healthy financial life. My guest is Marcia Brixey. She's a regular on King TV and Q13 Morning News, so you might be familiar with her voice. She's the founder and president of MoneyWise Women Educational Services and lives right here in the Northwest. Before founding MoneyWise, Marcia was a columnist for the Kitsap Sun, so you might know her from there too. She is passionate about educating and empowering women to achieve their own financial fitness. So let's bring her on. Marcia Brixey, welcome.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Vicki.
Yeah, very glad to have you here. And you've written this book, and it's called The Money Therapist, A Woman's Guide to Creating a Healthy Financial Life. So tell us why you wrote this book. There are, you know, tons on the bookshelves. What makes your book different, Marcia?
Well, I wrote the book because 6 years ago, I took early retirement from my public relations job with the Social Security Administration to educate and empower women on money. And I, over the time that I worked for Social Security and in my last few years working for public affairs, I just saw so many women that were not in tune with what they need to do to get their finances together. And it just made me, it makes me crazy. But I can also say that I've been there myself.
Yeah.
And so women, you know, we just don't tend to take care of ourselves. We tend to take care of everybody but us. And so I started the conferences, as you said, back in 2002. And as a result of doing the conferences, I decided to write a book because I could reach more people. You know, is what I'm saying in my book any different than some of the other books out there? Probably not. You know, I mean, many of us say the same thing, just in different ways.
Right. And sometimes that's the key. You know, sometimes we hear it one way and not another way.
Yeah, and one of the things that my book does is I share many stories from women who have shared their stories with me. And when women hear other women's stories, it kind of makes us feel like it's okay, I'm not alone.
Right, right.
You know, it's not just me that doesn't get this stuff.
Yeah.
Or isn't taking the time or whatever.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I was staggered at some of the statistics you have in the book. And I know nobody likes statistics, but, you know, if you're a woman listening today, and even if you're a guy listening today, we want to pay attention to these statistics because it affects the people we love if it doesn't effectively direct us ourselves. And I was just staggered to read that more women file for bankruptcy than graduate from college, suffer heart attacks, or are diagnosed with cancer. That was the first one.
Yeah.
Women lose an average of 14.7 years from the workforce, and for every year out of the workforce, it takes 5 years to catch up.
Isn't that astounding?
Yeah, how come?
Well, because you're out of the workforce, and when you're out of the workforce, you're getting fewer promotions. The money that you make, your pay is smaller, and so is your pensions because of you're out of the workforce. And that 5 years, when we talk about that 5 years to make up for every year that you're out, well, one thing you can think about, and I know people will tell me, oh, Social Security's not going to be here for me, or it's not going to be much or whatever. Yeah, it probably won't be a whole lot. It never was intended to be everything. But it's the reason that women get about $200 less a month is because they're out of the workforce.
Interesting.
So, I mean, women really need to pay attention to that. And what I really encourage them to do is when you're not working and you're staying home and taking care of your families, you know, I'm not telling them not to do that, but you need to be planning financially at the same time.
Mm.
And they can have a spousal IRA. So as long as their husband's working, they can contribute up to, you know, whatever the limits are, $5,000 right now for under 60 or under 50.
Right, right.
And when you take that and you multiply it times 40 hours a week, I mean, divide it by 40 hours a week, it comes out to like $2.50 an hour.
Wow.
Aren't we worth that?
Wow, yeah.
You know, I mean, you can look at it and say, oh my gosh, $5,000 is a lot. But is $5,000 a lot in the grand scheme of things?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
Not and at all. Women, you know, when they stay home, and I'm not saying every woman says this, okay, but I do hear this a lot. I don't need to worry about it. My husband takes care of all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, husbands leave. Husbands die. Things happen. Husbands get, you know, get injured or disabled. And we just need to make sure that that's fine that husband, we need to make sure we're taking care of ourselves too.
Right. And, you know, I just want to throw this out there because I worked in the financial industry for over 15 years. And a common thing that I saw was, you know, you mentioned here that divorce rate for first marriages, we all know, is around 50%.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot tell you how many times I had a man or a woman in my office crying their heart out because their partner, who they loved and trusted, had cleared out the bank accounts and left them with nothing, and then come home, packed their suitcases, and left the home.
And you know what, Vicki, you're not surprising me.
Yeah, I can't, it used to stagger me every time, and I was like, how can this happen to people who, you know, supposedly were in love at one point, and then one person is so callous, they go in and clean out the, and it wasn't always men, it was women as well.
Right.
And they'd leave the other partner with absolutely not even enough money to buy milk, you know, unless they'd got a little cash pot in the house.
Well, or even if they don't clean out the bank accounts, you know, a lot of times, especially in this day and age, you're in debt. So you split up and you've still got this huge amount of debt you're trying to pay off.
Right.
Or maybe you didn't have a lot of money in the bank or in savings and investments, so you don't really have anything to live on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't have to empty out the bank accounts. It's just if you're not doing good financial planning. And many of us just don't take the time for it. I just was having this discussion with somebody about how hard it is for us to get women to come to our conferences. And it's like, you know, with the economic times the way they are now, it should be when they're coming.
Yeah. I think a lot of women don't like dealing with it. You know,
it's not sexy.
Well, I try to make a game of it now. But, yes.
I know, but I mean, it's not a sexy topic.
It's not.
It's very educational and empowering. And when you get it, I mean, when you start to get that empowerment, it's kind of, you just don't want to quit.
Mm.
But to get there, you know, to take that first step is hard.
Yeah. And you mentioned, Jess, that, you know, men leave and die. And the average age of a widow is, this shocked me, is 58.
Yep.
And then
well,
when
some people say it's 56. It's between 56 and 58, yes.
Well, either way, that's young.
Yes.
That is young. And then when the husband dies, 80% of widows who do live in poverty were not that way before they became widows. So
now, isn't that scary?
That statistic alone should wake some people up from denial.
Yeah.
And think, you know what? I need to figure out what's going on.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that one is the one that really gets me, that 80%.
Mm.
Because, and again, I hear it all the time. I tell people I'm not Catholic, but I feel like Sister Mary Margaret, because people confess things to me.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're not things you really want to hear, but, you know, you have compassion for them, just like what you're talking about when people came to see you as when you're in the financial field,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, they share these things because they don't know who else to talk to, because we don't talk about money.
Right.
And they happen to them, and then they share these stories with you, and you're like, oh, you know, if only I could have talked to you 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, have your finances in order. It's not to say you know, I'm not encouraging people to be financially independent from their spouse or their significant other or partner, whatever. You know, talk about it together, but get your act together.
Yeah, know what you've got and what expenses you might have, and don't think necessarily that a divorce settlement is going to take care of things, because the other person still has free will as to whether they actually participate in that divorce settlement.
Well, and I guess you could consider it like buying homeowner's insurance. You don't buy homeowner's insurance because you want your house to burn down.
Right.
And you buy homeowner's insurance because you want to protect your house. So you could consider it the same thing as learning about money and getting educated and getting your house and your financial house in order. You're not doing it because you want to divorce your husband or you want your husband to die or something to happen to him. You just want to make sure that you have that insurance.
Yeah.
That it's all taken care of.
Yeah. Now, your story itself is inspirational because you were, as you said, working with Social Security Administration. You were doing PR and you got to a point where you just the stresses of your day were what? They were wearing you down. You weren't happy.
Well, when they first put me in public relations, put me in charge of women's issues, which is how I got passionate about this. I went to a lot of conferences and I had pretty much free rein to do what I wanted to do. I'm a very innovative person. And then they said, oh, you're doing such a great job. Let's put you in charge of another topic. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And so we were kind of butting heads. And things had been happening anyway at work that just weren't the same as when I started, and I just wasn't happy. But when you've been in a job working for a government agency for 26 years, you know, all my working life, it's really hard to say I'm going to take early retirement and retire 8 years early. And it was just a real struggle for me until my doctor finally said, you know what, Marcia, you really need to stay home and take care of yourself for a few weeks and get your act together. And when I did that and I started reading inspiration and motivational books and journaling, I read a quote that said, our purpose in life is to find our gift, perfect it, and give it back to others. And as soon as I read that quote, I knew I was leaving.
Oh, I love that quote. That's great.
I mean, it just really touched me, and this is my gift, and I'm good at it, and I just really felt passionate about educating and empowering women on money and getting their act together. And because my husband and I, when I read a financial book back in about 1996, we were what I call financial frauds. We looked great on the outside. We had great jobs with the federal government. We had nice house, nice car, went on great vacations, dressed nicely. But we were in $10,000 in credit card debt. We didn't have a will. We had no money in savings. So basically, we were living paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, there were a few other things. And when I read that, I thought, you know, we got to get our act together. And because we did, we took small steps over the next few years. And because we did, I got to retire early. If we hadn't, I would still be working in a job I was miserable at.
Yeah, and because you've been there, you've walked that path, you're perfect person to go and empower the women with this. So let's look at the first strategy that you talk about, and you say get in touch with your spending. And I know this is a really hard one for people. I have tried to track my spending on a daily basis, and I last about, you know, 3 or 4 days, maybe 5 days sometimes, and then I just stopped doing it. What do you recommend to people? Why do they need to track their spending?
Well, because we are a nation of unconscious spenders, because we don't even think about where we're spending money. And one of the things that's really happened in our nation is many of us never touch cash anymore. Our paychecks go directly to the bank. We don't, you know, so we never really see cash. We use debit cards and credit cards. And so we don't even think about it when we're spending money. And so what I really encourage people to do is either take a small notebook or a blank checkbook register and try to write down everything you're spending for at least 2 weeks. Now, if you've ever been on Weight Watchers or any kind of food plan where they have you journal your food, it's the same kind of thing. And what I recommend you do is for that first 2 weeks, don't spend any differently. Just write it down. But what's going to happen is you're going to get up to, let's say you're going out to lunch and you're thinking, oh, I'll just have this little extra. And then you'll go, oh, do I really want to have that? I have to write it down. Or you're at the checkout stand at the grocery store and you see the People magazine for $4.95. Do I really want this just to read, you know, the cover story, which will be done in 10 minutes, and then I'm not going to read the rest?
Right.
It's about having that consciousness. And, yeah, it's not, if you try for 14 days, you know, if you stop 3 or 4, 5 days, that's okay. Look to see what you did in 3 to 5 days and start again. But it's really more to get you to thinking about where your money is going. And just writing it down, you're going to probably spend 10 to 20% less.
And it can actually be quite shocking when you do go through that exercise to realize where your money is going.
Right. Yes, it can be. And I haven't had anybody come back and tell me they didn't find something.
Yeah.
You know, and the something is different for each person.
Yeah. A lot of people will say they're pushed to the limit. They have no spending money for leisure things. Everything's going on, you know, basic expenses. You say you don't believe people when they say they have no money to save.
Well, I'm not saying that there aren't some. Mm-hmm. But most of them, no, because I used to say the same thing. And what happens is once you start really getting in touch with where your money's going, you can find money that you're spending money, things that you're spending money on that you can redistribute and put somewhere else. You can save it, invest it, whatever.
Right.
Or pay a credit card debt down, or you know, start an emergency fund or whatever. But usually, I'm not saying that there aren't some exceptions,
mm-hmm.
but usually we're spending more money than we know what, I mean, that we just don't realize where our money's going.
Right. So once we've got an idea of where it's going, how do we start trimming back? I mean, one of the examples you give here, this is the way I look at things a lot, is before you buy something, think about how many hours you've had to work to earn that.
That's a really powerful one. But before we talk about that one, let me just tell you, I have what I call a checkout checklist,
mm-hmm.
and it's 6 questions, and that's one of the questions. Here's the questions I recommend you ask yourself before you make a purchase. Do I really want this? Do I need this? Will I use this? And here's the one that kills the ladies. Am I buying this just because it's on sale? Yeah. Men say that doesn't get them as much as women. How many hours will I have to work to pay for this? And do I really love this?
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have this in a business card size that you can print out on our website, so you can carry it in your wallet.
Oh, that's good. Let's just give your website out right now, because you actually have a lot of really great resources on there.
It's moneywisewomen.net.
Okay, moneywisewomen.net, and we'll give that out again before the end of the show, because there really are some good resources on there. So, okay, what else do we, how else can we mend and trim our spending? Obviously, leaving our credit cards at home is a good one.
Right.
But then I always have this panic, you know, what if my car breaks down?
You know what I tell people? If you're going to carry a credit card with you for emergency purposes, then wrap a piece of red paper around it and write emergency. When you go to pull that, you know, it's all about getting your mind to think, conscious. So when you pull that credit card out, you look, you go, oh, you know, this pair of shoes I'm buying, is it really an emergency? No.
Right.
You know, but then if you choose to spend it, okay. It's really about getting conscious about what you're doing.
Yeah, that makes sense, giving you time to pause and think before you make the purchase.
Well, yeah, and going back to that, you know, how many hours will it take me to, how many hours will I have to work to pay for this? So the same thing, you're buying that pair of shoes and it costs $60 and you make, I don't know, well, let's see, 15, I'm going to try to make this easy. You make $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take you 6 hours.
Right.
And that's gross, not net.
Right.
6 hours to pay for those shoes.
Right.
Do you really like them that much?
Yeah.
You know, it's really getting in touch with that.
Okay, makes sense. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Marcia Brixey, and her book is called The Money Therapist, A Woman's Guide to Creating a Healthy Financial Life, and we'll look at some of the other strategies that Marcia has put together. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Next week on Conversations Live, Dr. Flora Stay shares the secret gateway to health. Dr. Stay has helped thousands of people to better health and is joining us to share what she believes is the single most important thing you need to know for a long, healthy life. We'll also be talking with educator Bernie Sheen. He's known for inspiring his students and is joining us to share his expertise in turning kids around and helping them become their authentic selves. Join us next Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out more about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
Hi, I'm Vicki St. Clair and wanted to let you know about Book Talk, a weekly podcast brought to you by Conversations Live. In Book Talk, we'll be reviewing books from the eclectic to the banned to the challenging and, of course, to the easy and fun summer beach read. You can download Book Talk podcasts at 1150kknw.com under the podcast section of the site. If you'd like to be a guest reviewer for Book Talk, call me, Vicki, at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or drop me an email at info@conversationslive.net.
commune with the pop oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Money. Good way.
Welcome back. We are talking today with Marcia Brixey. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest has written a new book called The Money Therapist, A Woman's Guide to Creating a Healthy Financial Life. And we talked in the first part of today's show about how passionate Marcia is about educating women about money, because many of us choose to let somebody else deal with it or just not pay attention to it. But that big D word, the denial word, can get us into a lot of trouble, right, Marcia?
Oh, yeah. Or as you said, Vicky, avoidance.
Yes, avoidance. It's like, oh, you know, yes, I have a big box. I'll put all that stuff in there and look at it tomorrow. Uh-huh. Tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow.
Okay, so we looked a little at about getting in touch with your spending and how to a couple of strategies for trimming back on that once we know where we're going. Let's talk about the big credit card debt, because that is something, you know, I've seen people at grocery stores putting, you know, groceries on cards, and sometimes it's necessity, sometimes it's because they want the air miles or whatever.
Right.
But let's talk about credit card debt. What's the most common myth that you find when you're dealing with women about credit card debt?
Myth? I don't know about a myth, but the thing with credit card debt is, you know, it's something. Actually, I had an interviewer tell me this. It's really easy to get into, and it's really hard to get out of.
Mm.
Kind of like gaining weight.
Yeah.
It's really easy to put the weight on, and it's really hard to get it off. And the thing with the credit card debt is I talk about this woman in my book. She's actually somebody local, and she agreed to use her real name. She was $50,000 in credit card debt.
Holy.
And did not know it until she wrote it down.
Wow.
She knew she had a lot of debt. She knew she was having a hard time paying it off, but until she sat down and wrote down every single account, summarized it, and how much she owed, she did not know how much.
There's that avoidance factor again.
There it is. And the thing is, when I talk at conferences and I bring this up, I talk about the average family with one credit card debt is $9,300 in debt. I mean, with one credit card.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And when I say that, people kind of roll their eyes and act like, oh, please, this can't be true. When I know darn good and well that out there in that audience, there's people with a lot more debt than that.
There is. I mean, I remember, you know, it's been 10 years since I worked in the financial industry, but I remember people, $90,000 in credit card debt back then.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Well, and the thing about I guess this is the thing that's really eye-opening, and this is just this example that I always talk about, is if you have that $9,300 in debt, and you're only paying the 2% minimum payment, and your interest rate is 12.9%,
mm-hmm.
It would take you 32 years to pay the card off.
Wow.
You would have paid $10,462 in interest. That's more interest than whatever you charged.
Wow.
And the total that you paid was $19,774.
Yeah.
And Vicky, that's only if you never use the card again.
Wow.
Now, isn't that scary?
It's staggering. What about these offers that banks make? You know, I had a couple come through with my credit union, and they said, you know, back to school expenses, waive your monthly payment for the month of August. But then people are still accruing interest. That's what
exactly.
I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I used to, years ago, I used to do that with our, I think it was Wells Fargo MasterCard. They'd say, don't, you know, skip it in December. And I think, oh, this is a good deal. It's not a good deal. You know, because you are still paying the interest on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't pay the payment that month, but you're still paying the interest on the total.
Right. Now, what if someone has several credit cards and you say in the book you recommend paying off the highest interest rate? Other people that I've talked with recommend paying off the smallest balance first, because it gives
I say pay the smallest balance.
Okay, you do? Okay.
Yes, because the thing is there's two schools of thought on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I always tell people, pay off the card with the smallest balance first, because once you've done that, you've got a sense of accomplishment. You can say yahoo, pat yourself on the back, and then take the money that you were paying towards that account and move it to the next one.
Yeah, it gives you a psychological boost.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's really what a lot of this has to do with, getting your mind wrapped around the fact that you can do it. You know, it can be done.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I would even say the next card, I would go for the one with the next high, the next lowest balance, so that you can get those cards paid off. You can put them away. You're not using them anymore. And then you just keep adding that money that you were paying towards that one account to the next account until they're all paid off.
Okay. Makes sense.
Go ahead.
There is such a thing as good debt on credit cards, right?
Not on credit cards. I wouldn't say that. Well, the one thing I do recommend with a credit card is, if you are disciplined and you pay your card off every single month, and my husband and I now do that, we've done that for years since we got out of debt, then I recommend you have a card with some kind of reward.
Mm-hmm.
Because you may as well use the bank's money for a month.
Yeah.
But that's for somebody, you know, if you're disciplined and you pay your cards off. Ours is an airline card, and we fly to Hawaii free once a year.
There you go.
Now, whatever the reward is, and you can get reward cards at no cost, so you don't even pay an annual fee.
Right.
But the other thing I was going to, the good debt is debt that, mortgage debt can be good debt because you're buying a house, and also student loan debt because you've invested in your education.
Right. Anything that you're going to get some kind of investment back on.
Right, right. You're going to get something on your return.
Okay. So let's talk, since we're talking about credit cards, and they do kind of go hand in hand. Strategy three is get clear on credit report and your score. And I know this is a huge thing, and I know it's really impacting people right now.
Can I say one more thing about credit cards before we move on?
Yeah.
One other thing I recommend you do, it does work, is call your credit card companies to request a lower interest rate.
Mm.
They will lower your interest rate. Not all the time, but many times, and that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And also, you know, I'm a huge credit union proponent because they do tend to have lower interest rates. They do tend to work with people better than banks, more so than banks do.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, always call. Just as an example, I got my Macy's bill today, and they charged me a $29 late fee. I was not late on my payment.
Oh.
So, you know, I picked up that phone and called them and said, I want the $29 taken off plus the finance charge, and they took it off.
Yeah.
So, you know, be sure and read those bills and pay attention to that.
Yeah, I think we do tend to get in a rush and tend to trust that, I didn't use that card, so there's nothing on it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we do have to watch that. In fact, we did a show earlier this year, I believe it was, maybe the end of last year. I talked with MSNBC's Bob Sullivan, and he said that the average consumer pays $946 a year in hidden fees,
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, because if I can't always say I'm perfect and look at my bills, but, you know, I really do try to pay attention. And I went, $29 late fee? Why are they charging me that? I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and other companies will suddenly start charging a fee when they've maybe not charged a fee before. So
mm-hmm.
That's another thing. And they will charge you interest on that if you're not paying it off. So I
had
that happen to me.
Well, and, you know, that goes into the next strategy, which you were starting to talk about, is your credit report.
Yeah.
And it's very important. Those kinds of things are very important to pay attention to, because they could affect your credit report.
Right. Definitely.
And your credit report, people don't often realize this, but it's your financial report card. It is more important than the SATs are to high school students. And it's becoming more and more important every...
That is sad.
Do what?
That is sad.
Yeah, it is. But everybody's looking at it. I mean, I always say, who's looking at it? And it's pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
Not only creditors, but insurance companies look at it. Many insurance companies look at your credit report to determine whether to renew your insurance or to increase your rates. Employers look at it, and sometimes that future employers, and sometimes you don't get hired because what's on your credit report.
That's right. That's right.
And landlords look at it. You know, I mean, the list goes on.
Mm. I actually was just talking with somebody whose automobile insurance rates went up because he'd been traveling and he forgot to pay his cable bill or something like that, the cable bill and the electricity bill. And so he was 30 days late on those by the time he got back, and his automobile insurance got bumped up because of that.
Oh, boy.
They are doing that.
I hope he called and complained.
Well, he did, and I'm not sure what yeah. was resolved on that. Just
you know what I always tell happened. People? The one thing about not is that you can't get a yes answer if you don't ask.
That's
you
right.
can't get a yes or a no. So never just assume that that's going to happen. Always call and question it.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you've never paid late. You could say, hey, look at, I had one time.
Yeah. So let's talk about the FICO score, as it's called, and what that actually means. And the difference, just to give people an example here, if your FICO score is 760 to 850, your monthly payment, you might get an interest rate as low as 5.738. This is an example from the book, which makes your monthly payment 1,748 versus if you have a low credit score, your payment could be as much as almost $1,000 more than that.
Isn't that scary?
It is very scary. So let's talk about what we need to know about our credit score and where we can find it.
Okay. Well, your credit score, your credit report, let's back up a minute. Credit reports you can get free. So you can get them free from the three major credit reporting agencies, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. You can get them free once every 12 months. Your credit score you're going to have to pay for anywhere from probably $10 to $15, but believe me, it's worth paying for it at least once a year, or if you think you're going to be refinancing or buying a house or buying a car or whatever. Mm. And the most commonly used credit scoring model is the Fair Isaacs company, which is called FICO. And you've probably heard commercials, myfico.com. Now, I do want to mention that there is another company now that credit model that's called, I think it's called the Advantage System, and it's tied into those three major credit reporting agencies. So when you go to get your credit report, they'll offer it to you. And the scores are somewhat different, and it's not a commonly used model.
Okay.
But also know that credit scoring, there's hundreds of different types of credit scoring. So, and I've probably confused the total audience.
So, but FICO, the Fair Isaac credit report.
It's the most common.
It's the most common.
It is.
Yeah.
And so what that chart shows that you're talking about is that that's a mortgage chart. And my example is just a little bit different than yours because it's probably a little more updated from the book. And it's a $300,000 mortgage, 30-year fixed. And what you said is right. You're going to pay about $1,000 more a month if you've got a score between 500 and 579 than if you have a score between 760 and 850. And over the lifetime of that loan, you're going to pay $358,000 more in interest.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
when you look at it, it's staggering.
It is. It's staggering. So the way that you get the way that you improve your credit score, the biggest way you can do that is to pay your bills on time.
Yeah. You say that makes up about 35% of your score.
Yeah. So paying your bills on time. Now, another thing that people don't realize is that, and I didn't realize this years ago. I used to get my credit card statements, and all I'd look at is, you know, how much is our minimum payment? This is when we were fixing up houses back in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
How much is my minimum payment, and how much do I have before I reach my limit? That's not a good way to look at it. Because you want to keep your the amount that you own on your credit card, I think it's below 50% of what you owe.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the creditors look at that, and what they look at, they look to see, okay, you know, if you're close to the maximum amount, then they're looking to say, this person must be in financial difficulty,
right.
Or could be.
Right.
So you really need to try to keep the amount you owe on the card low.
Yeah. See, if a lender looks at somebody's credit history and they've got one credit card that's maxed.
Right.
So let's say you've got $10,000 limit and you owe, you know, 9,000 and something on it. They look at that worse than if you've got two credit cards at
yep.
10,000 but you've got two $5,000 balances on it because there's no leeway there. You're actually maxed out on that card.
Right.
So yeah,
right.
It's a big thing.
So, you know, and we don't often think about that kind of thing. So if you're looking to improve your score, you need to think about that. The other thing I tell people is, you know, when you pay your credit cards off, don't close your accounts because that can lower the amount that, you know, your debt to income or debt ratio.
Right. Now, a lot of people don't know that.
don't know not to close their account?
Yeah, they think they're doing the right thing. Oh, well, let me close my accounts, and then, you know, I'll have no credit history. Then I'll
right.
have, you know.
Right. No, you know, I really recommend don't close them. Lock them up somewhere and don't use them. Or if you don't want to use them, cut them up, but
right.
don't close them.
Right.
Because that helps with your ratio. Now, on the other hand, like my husband and I, we've paid off. We don't have any debt except our monthly Visa card. And so I have closed pretty much all the department store cards.
Right.
You know, maybe it hurt us a little bit, but it shouldn't have hurt us by much. I just don't want them around. But that's only because we don't have any debt.
Yeah. Yeah, and you definitely don't want them around if you are not using them and they've got annual fees on, too.
Right. Well, and another big thing is, and people don't often realize this, every time you go into a department store, so this time let's say we're talking Penny's, and Penny says to you, would you like to open a credit card today and we'll give you 15% off all day? And you say yes. Well, the minute you say yes, they're requesting your credit score, mm-hmm. your credit report, and that's called a hard inquiry. And a hard inquiry can reduce your score by up to 5 points.
Mm.
And let's say you're shopping at the mall with girlfriends and you're going from store to store and you're saying yes everywhere you go. You know,
right.
say you do five, that
right.
that could reduce your score by 25 points in one day of shopping.
Wow. And that's tempting to do when you've got a big shop to do, you know,
oh,
around
yeah.
the holidays.
Yep. I tell people, just say no, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't want to take that, you know, chance of hurting my credit score.
I always tell them, yes, I'd like the 15%, but I don't want the card, thank you.
Exactly. Well, you know, you think 15%, but then that 15%, if you're going out to refinance your house and it's going to reduce, you know, look at your mortgage payment. Remember the example we just used?
Yeah.
That's not really a good deal.
Significant, yeah.
Yeah.
So how does credit counseling affect your score? Let's look at credit counseling. Because we're seeing ads on television all the time for, you know, are you in debt? You know, call this credit counselor, or some call it financial debt rearrangement or
mm-hmm.
financial debt management. Are those good things or are those bad things?
You know what? I tell people to be very, very cautious. I would actually probably recommend that you would check with your Better Business Bureau before you do anything to make sure they're reputable. You want to look for organizations that are going to help educate you so that, you know, once you're getting through the debt, once your debt's paid off, that it's not going to reoccur.
Mm.
So you're not like putting a Band-Aid effect on it. You're really digging deeper and getting it taken care of. And then you have to be very careful with the companies that say, you know, you pay us so much a month and then we'll pay the debt to all of your credit card companies, because some of those companies, they say they're going to do that, but they don't.
Yeah.
And then it falls back on you.
Oh,
so
interesting.
I personally tell people, do everything you can possibly do before you go there.
Yeah, I kind of see them in the same category as, you know, the old used car dealer.
Mm-hmm. I would actually recommend that a person work with a financial counselor. And we do, the financial counseling field is becoming, when a few years ago there was only one locally in the Seattle area that I knew of, and now there's several of them. And they will help you, you know, develop a spending plan. You notice I use spending plan, not budget. They'll help you determine, you know, how you get that debt paid off. And then they'll help you determine getting to the root of what your money issues are.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. I'm talking today with Marcia Brixey, and you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a PAWS Foster Care Volunteer. For more information, visit PAWS.org or 425-787-2500. PAWS.org or 425-787-2500.
Looking for new fiction authors? For a different kind of book? For good writing that challenges the mind, the heart, the spirit? Then check out Book Talk Podcasting at 1150kknw.com. Book Talk brings you weekly bite-sized book reviews brought to you by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. You can listen to Book Talk podcasts at 1150kknw.com or anytime by downloading them to your MP3 player. If you'd like to try your hand at submitting a review, email info@conversationslive.net for more information. To listen to Book Talk, go to 1150kknw.com and click on podcasting. It's that simple.
Hi, this is Howard Bono, the host of The Money Thing, heard right here on Tuesdays at noon. You don't need to know everything about money, but there are some things you really should know. Each week, my co-host Gary Mance and I will bring you the information that you need. We cut through all the verbiage and marketing hype to provide you with an hour of condensed, easy-to-understand information. We want to improve the quality of your life by taking the financial stress away. So join us for The Money Thing, Tuesdays at noon, here on Alternative Talk 1150.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest today is Marcia Brixey. She is the money therapist. She's written a book called The Money Therapist, A Woman's Guide to Creating a Healthy Financial Life. And I want to, before we go any further, Marcia, you do have a conference coming up this weekend?
Yes, we have one September 13th, which is this Saturday up in Bellingham at Whatcom Community College. And the conference is 3 keynote speakers. I do the opening, and then we have 2 other keynote speakers and 12 breakout sessions.
Okay.
So you get to attend your choice of 3 breakout sessions, and you get a copy of my book and lunch.
And the it's very reasonable fee. Do you want to tell them what the fee is?
It's $49.
Yeah.
After today, starting tomorrow morning, it will be $59, but right now it's still $49.
Okay.
And the other 2 keynotes are Michael Ann Volterra. She's from the Seattle area, and she talks about why women earn less. And then Sandra Smith, she's an author of Get What You Want Without Feeling Guilt. She's our closing keynote.
Okay. And then you have some breakout sessions as
and
well.
And then we
to
have breakout
that.
Sessions all financially on financial topics.
Okay. So if people want to are interested in learning more about this, how do they contact you? What do they need to do?
Go to our website, moneywisewomen.net. There is a selection for conferences, and you'll find the conference, and you can register right online.
Very good. Very good. All right. We'll try and mention that one more time before the end of the show.
Okay.
And I also wanted to let listeners know very quickly, because I forgot to announce this when he was on, but we talked with Dr. Thor Hansen a couple of weeks ago. He is a conservationist, and he lived with the gorillas in Uganda. He saved many of the gorillas in Uganda. And he's actually going to be at Fremont Place Books this coming Wednesday, September 10th at 7 p.m. And that was Thor Hansen. So information is on my website if you need more about that. So let's get back to the strategies, the 5 strategies that you mentioned, Marcia. And strategy number 4 is invest regularly and automatically. And this, again, is something that people tend to put off until tomorrow, until I've paid off my bills, mm-hmm. until I've taken vacation. What do you want to say on that?
Well, you know what? And I have to tell you, I've actually heard financial experts say, don't do this until you've paid off your credit card and you have money in savings. And I just absolutely don't agree with that. Because the thing about this, about investing regularly and starting now, I mean, do it, whatever you can invest as little as $50 a month, but start it and start it now no matter what age you are and make it automatic, because it can make a huge, huge difference down the line. And I tell people there is a difference between savings and investing. And I didn't realize this when I first started my journey to financial fitness years ago. But when you save, you're putting money into a relatively safe place, like a savings account, interest-bearing checking, mutual fund, certificate of deposit, or U.S. savings bond, whereas investing has a higher risk. And I know the stock market's going crazy right now. Believe me, I look at my statements every month and, just about die.
That's one thing I don't open lately.
Oh, it's just terrible. But, you know, you've got to remember it's over the long run.
That's right.
And you can't just be pulling it in and out, because if you do that, you're really not, it's not the right thing to do. You've got to make sure you've got somebody that's a financial advisor that's willing to work with you and educate you and mentor you.
Mm.
But the thing about the compounding interest, and Albert Einstein said compounding interest is the 8th wonder of the world. And we have a chart, and it's actually in my book on page 95, if you've got the book there, Vicki, that shows what can happen if you invest as little as $10 a week.
Right.
And if you invest, and starting at age 30, $10 a week, that's $520 a year. At age 65, you'll have $99,000.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, now let's look, if you started just 10 years earlier at age 20, same amount, investing the same amount at age 65, you'd have $228,563.
Mm.
So $129,000 because you started 10 years earlier.
Yeah, amazing.
That is, you know, if somebody had shown me this in my 20s, I'd be a millionaire.
Well, I think that's a key thing that, you know, we need to pass on to our daughters and our sons. I mean, it's very hard, though, to talk to younger people and tell them, you know, invest now for your future, because we all think we're invincible.
I know. So you know what I've told people to do? Because I tell them, I remember in my 20s, if somebody had told me this, I'd say, retirement, that's never going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
So take the word retirement out of your vocabulary and replace it with financial independence.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not age-related.
That makes sense. That makes perfect
sense.
Because
you can say, you know what, at age 50 or age 45, I want to be financially independent. And then you determine it. You make the decisions. I mean, retirement sounds like so far away.
Yeah.
That's what our parents do.
What do you find with women is the biggest fear about investing?
I think that women don't think they're smart enough. They think that they have, this is what I have a whole thing I call money malfunctions, things that money malfunctions that affect women, and these are a couple of them. They don't think they're smart enough. They think they have to be perfect. They think they have to know it all before they start. They think they have to do it alone. But the deal is, we are smart enough. We don't have to do it alone. There's wonderful financial advisors out there that are willing to sit down and talk with you and educate you and mentor you, you know, or go to conferences and start to learn. I have a financial advisor.
How do you recommend somebody goes to a financial advisor? Because this, again, is something that's made headline news over the last, you know, 10, 20 years. Are financial advisors who are not so reputable? How do we know when we're getting a reputable financial advisor?
Well, in my book, there's a whole list of questions that you can call and ask them ahead of time. You know, do your interview, do your research. But the thing I would do before I even went to that point is I would ask my friends and people that you know who they work with.
Yeah.
And that's where I would start. And then I would start, and you can, there's a series of questions, like I said, that you can ask them. You can ask them, how long have you been working? You know, what's your educational experience? You know, how are you paid for your services? There, like I said, there's a whole list of questions in my book. And do it on the phone so you don't feel nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to even go in and meet with them. If you don't feel like you're connecting with somebody, don't go to them. And the thing is, there's the financial advisors, many of them charge by, they don't charge by the hour. They charge by the what they invest for you, so a percentage. And some people say that's good, some people say that's bad, versus a certified financial planner usually charges you an hourly rate or a set rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, some people think they're more comfortable with that person because they're not trying to lean toward, you know, gear you towards something they're going to make more money off of.
Right, right.
You know, I think you have to find somebody, to me the biggest thing is you have to find somebody that is willing to educate you and mentor you and talk to you about the whole financial picture.
Yeah.
You need to be meeting with them regularly.
Definitely, because circumstances change. I know my broker, I've known him for, ever since I've lived in America, we used to work together. And he'll call me every so often and go, what's new, what's changed, what needs to be changed?
Well, I tell people, my financial advisor, a year ago, you know, when the mortgage business all of a sudden went, last July, a year ago in July, and it went crazy, and she called up and she said, look, the market's about ready to take a huge tumble. Things are happening, and you've got some money invested in high risk, and we need to get it moved now.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And when I tell people that, they go, your financial advisor called you and told you that?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, she did. And we meet with her once or twice a year, and I tell her every time I meet with her, it's like going to the dentist.
Yes.
Terribly painful, you know? I mean, because I'm like, oh, man, this is hard to understand. But you have to do it.
Yeah.
it's for your own benefit. And she insists that we come in. She doesn't let us off the hook.
Yeah. So bottom line, we do not have to do it all around.
No.
There are people out there specializing. There are people like you putting on workshops. Strategy 5 is determine your goals and act on them. And you say prosperity is created by setting intentions. Tell us what you mean by that.
I'm sorry. I missed what you said again.
Sure. You said prosperity is created by setting intentions.
Oh, you need to set your intentions. And your intentions, that can also be your goals. But when you do that, when you set your intention, then your intentions create your thoughts. And your thoughts create choices. And choices create different outcome or action. You really need to take the time to think about those things. And then with goals, you need to take it one step further, and they need to be in writing. Because if you're like me, I can walk from one end of my house to the other, and I won't remember why I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep your goals up in your head, they're not going to happen. I mean, there's a good chance they're not going to happen. So they should be in writing and specific, clear, realistic, and they should have a deadline. And one of the things that... when we started out talking today, you were asking me about my leaving Social Security. And when my doctor told me to stay home and take care of myself, this is what happened. I sat down and thought about my intentions. I took time. And especially women, we don't take time for ourselves.
Right.
We think it's, we brag that we can multitask. And I'm not sure that's a really good thing, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do, I really believe you do need to take time and think about what your intentions are, what makes you happy, what lights your fire. This isn't just related to money. This is life in general.
Yeah, otherwise we're just reacting to everything that happens to us. Yeah.
And let me tell you what, I'm the worst person in the world to do this. It's very hard for me to do. But in fact, I broke my ankle 3.5 months ago, and I kept thinking, and I was in a boot for 3.5 months, and I kept thinking, why did this happen? And I think it was the universe saying, Marcia, slow down.
Yeah.
If you're not going to do it on your own, I'm going to help you.
Yeah, yeah. So how much do you recommend for a contingency fund these days with everything that's happening? Is it still like 3 to 6 months? Is it more than that?
You know what? My husband and I, when we started saving for a contingency fund, we never had 3 to 6 months. I mean, we might have been getting close, but that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
I say that you just, when you are paying off your debt, you need to be saving, putting money aside for that contingency and emergency fund. And there's really two funds. One's for, like, the kids need to go to summer camp. The other one's for, like, you've had a flood at your house or something, you know, real emergencies, or you've lost your job or whatever. So the thing is you just might need to start saving regularly towards both of those, and they will grow. Ideally, maybe 3 to 6 months, but you're probably going to have a long time before you get there.
Yeah.
And I hate to say the three to six months, because it's kind of like overwhelming. You think, I'm never going to get there, so why bother?
Right.
So don't think of it that way. You know, just put a set amount, put $50 a month or $25 a paycheck or whatever into the account. And then every time you get a cost of living increase or a pay raise or something like that, increase the amount.
Yeah, that I think that automatic payment is crucial, because you do forget about it when you are used to having it taken automatically out of your check,
mm-hmm.
or putting it, you know, paying yourself first. It's amazing how quickly that adds up.
Well, that's what we did, is we just what I just told you, we would increase it every time we got a pay raise. I'd see how much the raise was, and then we'd change it and redirect it. And by the time I took retirement, which was probably about, 7 or 8 years after we started, I was having $600 a paycheck. I got paid every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I retired and I got my retirement check, I didn't even notice the difference.
Yeah.
Because we were already living on that.
Yeah. Paying attention and let's stop all this avoidance. That's the bottom line, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, we're at the end of our show almost, Marcia, and I want to just quickly run through the dates again for the conference that you're having up here, because it certainly sounds worthwhile, and it's very affordable. So
September 13th in Bellingham, and it's $39 through today, goes up to $49 tomorrow. And then if you're not in that area, but you're in the Seattle and Tacoma area, we have October 18th in Olympia for $39. And then we're also having our first business women's conference October 25th in Seattle.
Okay, and where's that going to be held?
That's at North Seattle Community College.
Okay.
And the registration is a little more at $79.
Okay.
And there are 16 breakout sessions, all related to women, self-employed women and women in business.
All right, very good. And your website, again, is moneywisewomen.net.
That's right.
Moneywise Women.
And you'll find all those conferences on the website.
Okay, sounds very good. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing such great information.
It's been a pleasure.
And my guest, of course, Marcia Brixey, her book, The Money Therapist, A Woman's Guide to Creating a Healthy Financial Life. And I want to thank you for being with us. I also want to quickly remind you again that Dr. Thor Hansen, who spent a year with the gorillas, saving them in Uganda, or 2 years actually, is going to be over at Fremont Place Books on Wednesday, September 10th. That's this coming Wednesday at 7 p.m. And thanks for being with us today. We'll be back next week with an all-new show. Until then, live well, live strong. And we'll see you then.
Next week on Conversations Live, Dr. Flora Stay shares the secret gateway to health. Dr. Stay has helped thousands of people to better health and is joining us to share what she believes is the single most important thing you need to know for a long, healthy life. We'll also be talking with educator Bernie Sheen. He's known for inspiring his students and is joining us to share his expertise in turning kids around and helping them become their authentic selves. Join us next Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out more about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.